We have been going through a series this month, kind of talking about the life groups which we're starting. And it is sometimes feels a little bit like an overkill for me to be talking about life groups every week. But it is kind of for me to give a chance to explain where I see our church going and why I think these are important. And there's this aspect of life groups which I haven't talked about yet, which I'm kind of calling spiritual development milestones. And milestones are really interesting. So I didn't actually know that there were things called milestones. I thought they were always like, you know, oh, you just have your developmental milestone when your kid reaches so many years, his teeth start falling out, la, la, la. But there are real things called milestones, and you can find them in the UK where they're like stuck on, and they're like concrete or blocks and things like that. And they're interesting because they tell you one thing, where you have just arrived to, or how far you have come, a distance. And they're markers. They let you say, well, now you are here and you've traveled this many miles. Or they'll say, this many more miles until here. And I thought, oh, that's pretty interesting. What's even more interesting is that these things go way, way back in history. So this one is from Via Romana 55. Wow, is that just 58? Wow, so 58, I'm guessing AD or CE, depending on how you want to notate it. And so this is something connecting a Roman one that was connecting one part of Rome to another one. And so people have been using these for a long time as markers or things that help other people know where you've gone or where they've gone to. What's interesting to me is that this is something spiritually that we don't think about very much. Our spiritual development, or whether there are milestones with our spiritual development. So if we stop and we think about our workplaces, right? So in workplace, there are, of course, there are targets and goals, but there are other things which are milestones where you realize you've reached a destination or you've reached some level of maturity. And this happens in school too, right? Where you come to a certain place, you have areas where you can check them off and say, well, I've achieved this, I've learned these things, and I've grown from this. But when we start talking spiritually, it sort of disappears. So it'll be like, well, I became a Christian and I was baptized. And then it becomes very ambiguous. And what I've seen in my experience over the years is I've seen a lot of Christians who are sort of drifting through life. And for them, it's only like, oh, either I go into full-time missionary, become a full-time worker and a missionary, I go to Africa, or I just stay where I am and do my own thing. And because they're not going to go off to be a missionary someplace, they struggle to know, well, how do I grow? What does it mean to grow? Does it mean I just read the Bible every day? Does it mean I just pray, I just come to church? But are there more clear elements that we should be looking towards and saying, well, actually, should I be looking at spiritual development? I actually want to look in the scriptures first to see, well, is there precedence for this? And not only is there precedence, but why does God talk about this? Now, there are things, actually, throughout the Bible, which is this, basically a story of the past, the present, and the future. The Bible encompasses all of this in our lives. It is a story of what God has done in the past, but it's also a story of what God is doing in our lives in the present. And it's also a story of what will happen in the future. And this is important because it helps us to understand that we are within this narrative. All right, I'm going to get a little bit sort of complicated with you is there's, you all live within the scope of time. All right, everyone here lives within time, right? You, no one else is like a Time Lord or Doctor Who or something like that. None of you have your own little phone box that you go into and travel. So we're all bound by time. What that means is all of us are getting older. None of us are getting younger. Maybe mentally we might be regressing, but all of us are physically aging, right? We're all getting from one place to another. And that process, you can't stop it, right? You cannot stop yourself. You can't stop time passing, okay? You can't, you know, put your fingers together and freeze time. It will continue to go. And this is fascinating because God knows this and God has designed this. And certain things only happen with the passing of time. One is maturity. Your experiences only happen through the passing of time. The depth of relationships happen in the passing of time. There is a process here of growth that happens within time. And the Bible tells us about this. It illustrates to us that as the people have moved on, as God raised up one person to start a nation, to grow, to develop, to go through their own kingdom, to eventually have that kingdom split and moved into exile, to the coming of Christ, this is still one story through the passage of time. And there are things that happen every now and then that God does that are markers, that are milestones. And at these points, you say, wow, we have come someplace, or we have gone to this new location, or we've grown in some way. And I want to share with you a couple of them. And it's pretty amazing because if you start reading the Bible and looking for these milestones, you see them all over the place. And then the key words are, I'll let you know if you want to do this at home, is when someone says, remember, remember this, remember that. In other words, God is so keen on having us remember what he's done. The other thing that happens is the word altar. When they build an altar, I built an altar here so that you might, so we will remember this. I built an altar here. And the third thing that you see a lot is changing of names. They come to a place, something amazing happens, and you say, you know what? I'm changing the name of this place. We're calling this place so-and-so, so that we will remember who God is. Now, there's a couple. There's obviously this one, which is a pretty big one. So this is one of the first, you might say, milestones, where God wipes off civilization from the earth, and then he saves Noah and their family. And from there, the nations of the world come from. And God actually sets this rainbow in the sky. And this is his first milestone. The thing about the rainbow as a milestone is it tells us a couple things. One, it tells us, wow, God, you are sovereign. In other words, everything is under your control. Everything is under your authority. And that reality is on one hand awesome, but that awesome also contains fear when you suddenly realize, whoa, God, you aren't just a pretend God. You are the author of all creation. The other interesting thing about this milestone you still see today, right? It still happens. And yes, we understand that a lot of it has to do with the refraction of light through water and things like that, and it breaks up that prism. You see that. But the meaning behind it is still seen, and well, this is still God's symbol. There is still this saying where God's saying, yes, and I am still author of creation. Sure, you might have figured out how that works, but you don't know how I put that there. So that's one of the first kind of milestones we see, where God is saying, look, you, my people, Noah, when I have brought you out, I have saved you. Now, you have to think of it from Noah's perspective, right? So they've been on a boat. It's been horrible. And then they come out. It's been not raining for a long time. They finally get on land. And then God makes this promise with him. For us, when we read that, we only read it from that point. Oh, yes, he made a rainbow. But if you think about the journey that Noah went on, the time he spent on that boat, the time he spent thinking about God and talking to him, you understand that this itself was a journey in a relationship. And at the end of this, he would say, God, I love you more than I did before. I understand you more than I did before. I treasure you more than I did before. These milestones are not targets that you might see in your workplace or at school where they say you have educational targets to achieve. These are relational memories. They're what helps us grow in understanding that we serve and know a living God. It's why Christianity doesn't work like you can just churn out certain aspects and that will guarantee you, because it is a living relationship. You can't just check off a list of things and say, well, that makes me a good Christian. But rather you're saying, well, actually, in this process, I am learning about God and this relationship with him. There's no other sort of connection in the world that compares to this. The understanding that you have a spiritual life that is growing in your relationship with God. Here's another one. So just further on Genesis chapter 22, and this is Abraham, and this is God says, all right, so this is a great story, right? So God says, Abraham, I will make your name great, so you will be the father of many nations. Okay, so for any kind of nomadic people back then, a father of many generations means having lots of kids, which will be good because you can provide, and then we'll have a lot of money because the more kids we have, the more work they can do, the more money we can have. That's great. He doesn't have any kids for the longest time. Finally, he has a son, and God says, see, I told you, you're going to be father of many nations, and so this one son must be such a deep treasure. And then God says, okay, I want you to kill him. And, of course, Abraham says, okay, sure. Okay, if you say so, I trust you, I'll go with you. So he takes him up this mountain, right? And he says, he's going to be the sacrifice. I'm going to take my son to sacrifice. And for us, we're like, oh, that's brutal. No one does that. But back then, in that time and age, child sacrifice, no problem. Everyone else was doing it. Everyone thought we'd do this so that you would guarantee. It's almost like, well, if I kill this child, God will give me double. So, like, I'll trade in this one for two kids because this is what they're thinking. Or I'll sacrifice him to this god so that we will have good crops this year. And that was commonplace among those cultures at the time. So when God says to Abraham, do this, he's like, okay, well, I'm supposed to be father of many nations, but I'm going to trust you and take him up there. And he takes him to this hill, to this mountainside, and he's about to kill him. And his son goes, hey, you got the wood and you're getting the fire ready, but where's the sacrifice? And he says, well, God will provide. And then he goes, choom, and takes him and throws him on the altar, and he's about to kill him, and God says, stop! I know that you trust me, and so don't kill him. And it's kind of this, two things are happening here. One is God saying is, actually, you know what? I don't condone child sacrifice. It is not cool, and I won't do this. And for us, we're like, obviously, but we don't realize is that we have the blessing of generations of God at work in our hearts to shape us, to understand what is right and wrong. We take it for granted. But back then, this is a mind-blowing thing. Like, whoa, you're saving him? Not only that, God says, whoop, I've provided another sacrifice for you here on the side. And there's ram who suddenly, it's amazing because you're like, well, how did they not notice that there was a ram with his horn stuck in the thicket just like 5 minutes before? Because normally if an animal is stuck in the thicket, it will just keep moving around until it's free. So they find it, they get it out, and they have a new sacrifice. And at this point, in Genesis 22, it says, now Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, the Lord will provide. And to this day it is said, on the mountain of the Lord it will be provided. Once again, this amazing thing sort of happens, and Abraham says, this place is so special, I'm going to call it something different. I'm going to call it, the Lord will provide. And not just that, from that point on, people begin to know in their understanding, wow, actually God does provide. Now for us, we might take this story individually for this moment, but when you see it in the context of Abraham's life and his relationship with God and the journey that he came from leaving his home, not knowing where he's going to where God has taken to this point, you understand that this is a very significant milestone. This is a point where God begins to teach Abraham, this is what it means that you trust me. When I started reading these things, I started saying, God, actually, I want that too. I want to get to milestones. Where at the end of it, I am faced with maybe a challenge, but at the end of that challenge, I would say, God, you know, this is so special to me. I'm going to give it a name. This time will be the time that I knew that God loved me. Or this is the time that I learned how to pray for those in need. I want to come to those milestones. If we don't, then we will be static. And we won't be moving. We'll just be drifting along, waiting for us to die so we can go to heaven. But what if God loved you and wanted to grow in this relationship with you? So that you knew more and more about who he is. Wouldn't you want to be part of that? Because that's actually what God wants. That's why he sent his son to save us. That's why he desires us to be in this relationship with him. Let's move forward. And here's a real actual milestone, which I think is pretty interesting. Joshua chapter 4. When all the people had crossed the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, now choose 12 men, one from each tribe. Tell them, take 12 stones from the very place where the priests are standing in the middle of the Jordan. Carry them out and pile them up at a place you will camp tonight. So Joshua called together 12 men he had chosen, one from each of the tribes of Israel. He told them, go into the middle of the Jordan in front of the ark of the Lord your God. Each one of you must pick up one stone and carry it on your shoulder, 12 stones in all, one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel. We'll use these stones to build a memorial. In the future, your children will ask you, what do these stones mean? then you can tell them they remind us that the Jordan River stopped flowing when the Ark of the Lord's Covenant went across. These stones will stand as a memorial among the people of Israel forever. And I'll stop there for a bit. So what happened was, so Moses has died, and Joshua is leading the people, and he's going to lead them into the promised land. For them, they're the understanding, like, this is where God has been leading us, and this is where we're going to make our home. Up until now, we've been a nomadic people. We've been under Pharaoh in Egypt, and finally we're come out. We've come to a place now this is going to be our home. We're entering into this promised land. They get there, and there's a huge river. And they're like, oh, we got to get across this river. How are we going to cross this river? This is a bit funny, a bit odd that God would take us here. And what happens is, well, okay, God says, well, take the ark and walk through. And the ark was where they had the Ten Commandments. If you've seen Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark, that will give you some poor understanding of it, but at least you'll have a visual image. So they take it across the ark, and as they set foot into the ark, set foot into the river, the water seems to part. And this is not the Red Sea. This is a different kind of parting. And the river parts, and they walk, and they stop in the middle, and everyone can cross across. And Joshua says, "Yo, this is great. Everyone, let's get a big stone, 12 of them, because there are 12 tribes. Take it, and we'll put it in the middle of this river, and we'll build a little memorial here." Now, there's a couple cool things about this, right? So they're taking really big stones, right? We're not taking, like, the stones I could carry. We're talking about, like, really, like, almost boulders, and they're stacking them up in the middle. And so when the river comes back down, and you see this, people will be like, who put those rocks in the middle of this river? How did they get those rocks in the middle of the river? And that would be the point where they say, this is when God parted the waters. Now, this is a genuine milestone. This is a milestone for the people. One of the reasons the milestone for the people is this is a miracle that for a lot of them, they are seeing God working in this way for the first time. You have to understand that these aren't the ones who saw the Red Sea parted to escape from Egypt. Those guys are all died. This is a completely new generation who doesn't know God in that same way. And they come to this river and God does this thing and they're like, wow, our God is powerful. Our God is almighty. And they begin to say, wow, this is something different. And on top of that, they begin to see, wow, not only that is God is leading us forward into the promised land. We don't have to be afraid. And so they make this memorial. They make this marker to say where they have been. And the second reason they do this is to tell their children about it. They say, this is why that's there. Okay, now this is where it goes wrong for us. We read these stories, and so let's say we're the child of one of these parents who saw the river parted and they put the stones there. And the mom says, you don't understand anything, because when you were a little baby, you know, God did this. And you need to remember this. And this is he put these stones there. And for the child, they'll be like, okay, fine. I remember. Okay, you've told me this story a million times, mom and dad. Yeah, yeah, God is faithful. We put stones in the river. La, la, la. And that's how we hear these stories. And we say, that was something that happened in the past. You know? That was a long time ago. And we tell it to our children's children. And they're like, well, that's even further in the past. It's like, oh, I only need to remember that. It's like us telling people a long time ago, the computers didn't have hard drives and the entire operating system could fit on one disk. And they'll say, what's a disk? And you're like, it's not in the cloud. And they'll be like, oh, once upon a time, clouds were only atmospheric things in the sky. And I'm like, whoa, you lived in such a backward time. Because they don't understand, because time actually creates distance, you might say. Mental distance. Your memory distance. But if you've paid attention so far, what has God been doing with the people? It's actually story after story, memorial after memorial, altar after altar. In other words, there is progression. There are new stories for each generation. And we're not talking about stories that replace God's word, but this is part of that collective for us. But when your life becomes alive in your relationship with God and you have new stories on what God is doing in your life, it becomes real. It's funny because when that happens to you and God challenges you in some way and you have this strong memory of what it is, you'll look at that and say, wow, this is just like the time, God, in the Bible when you did this, except now it's so personal and real. What we don't realize is that God desires that for each of us, to be on this journey together. Our God is a living God, people. He's not just a pretend one. He's not just someone in the books. He is alive and seeking you and this journey with you to discover what these milestones are. Let's go on. There's a great example of this in, I'm going to try to read this, it's really small, Psalm 136. So most of us aren't Jewish. Is there anyone Jewish here, actually? So one of the most amazing things about Jewish or very Orthodox Jews is they have an amazing history that they continue to remind themselves of. They continue to remind themselves of what has happened in the past. And for us in Europe, our history of the Jews probably only goes to World War II, and then we just don't think anything else about that. But for Jewish people, the history goes back very, very far, and they remember these feasts. And they might not even believe in God sometimes, but they will remember these aspects of tradition or these history, these memories, these stories. And Psalm 136 is the perfect example of this, and I'll read this out, because it's just talking about all the things that God has done. So put your listening ears on, because it's a moderately long psalm. Sorry. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his steadfast love endures forever. Give thanks to the God of gods, for his steadfast love endures forever. Give thanks to the Lord of lords, for his steadfast love endures forever. To him who alone does great wonders, for his steadfast love endures forever. To him who by understanding made the heavens, for his steadfast love endures forever. To him who spread out the earth above the waters, for his steadfast love endures forever. To him who made the great lights, for his steadfast love endures forever. The sun to rule over the day, for his steadfast love endures forever. The moon and the stars to rule over the night, for his steadfast love endures forever. And brought Israel out from among them, for his steadfast love endures forever. With a strong hand and an outstretched arm, for his steadfast love endures forever. To him who divided the Red Sea in two, for his steadfast love endures forever. And made Israel pass through the midst of it, for his steadfast love endures forever. But overthrew Pharaoh and his host in the Red Sea, for his steadfast love endures forever. To him who led his people through the wilderness, for his steadfast love endures forever. To him who struck down great kings, for his steadfast love endures forever. And killed mighty kings, for his steadfast love endures forever. Sihon, king of the Amorites, for his love endures forever. Or Og, king of Bashan, for his steadfast love endures forever. And gave their land as a heritage, for his steadfast love endures forever. A heritage to Israel, his servant, for his steadfast love endures forever. It is he who remembered us in our low estate, for his steadfast love endures forever. And rescued us from our foes, for his steadfast love endures forever. He who gives food to all flesh, for his steadfast love endures forever. Give thanks to the God of heaven, for his steadfast love endures forever. This is basically a recanting of some of the things that God has done, and remembering that God's love endures. Now, you might read this and think, wow, that guy, it's great, they have a lot of history and stories. But my desire is actually, you know, God, I want to be able to write something like this as well. Where one day I can go back and write, God, for what you did here when I was 30, your love endures forever. God, you know, and when you did this for me when I was 28, you know, your love endures forever. And then when I learned this when I was 20, your love endures forever. And then this year when I was 18, so many things happened. Your love endures forever. The ability to go back and look at these milestones and say, actually, God, you are so good. You're so faithful. I'm so thankful to you. You know what that does? It lets you look at the past and see it through God's eyes. It gives you strength to live in the present because you understand that your God is faithful. And it gives you hope to live for the future because you understand who he is. And this is almost directly opposite to the way that we're living today, where everything is disposable, where things are instant, where the memories that we capture, we don't even experience them that much. Most recently, I read that if you Instagram a picture of your food, you actually enjoy it less, the food. Isn't that amazing? I was like, wow, how does that happen? But they did research, and they found out that those people who take pictures of the food actually don't enjoy their food as much. And I thought, that's because the food gets cold because they're so busy trying to use this filter. I thought, oh, that's really interesting because people are no longer creating this sense of memory or of history. but you're living very much for the moment. But what God is trying to remind us is there is so many amazing things to be thankful for, to appreciate, to see how God has been leading. And there's so many more adventures to be had in the future. Let's look on. So we have this, communion, where Jesus is singing with his disciples. And we don't actually recognize that this is a memorial, but it is, isn't it? They're sitting together and they're eating, and then Jesus says, you know, actually, this is my body broken for you. This is my blood poured out for you. And this is his memorial to them. He's saying, this is the story. I am that story. And for us, when we do communion today, and we'll do it next week, it's actually our point to remember, wow, we are still part of this story. And this milestone of Jesus, you giving up your life, wow, what milestones do you want to lead me forward on? See, you actually don't see milestones if you're not moving. If you are parked and settled in a place and no longer growing, the only milestones you see are the ones in the past. Only the stories in the Bible. And the longer you are settled, the more complacent you become about it. But God seems to be very interested in growing faith, in learning and developing. It's in this that we're kind of saying, well, maybe I should think about moving forward. Spiritual development milestones is ways to kind of think about these in more digestible terms. I think one of the biggest problems we have is when we are believers, it's almost like, well, all or nothing. And what happens is we just feel guilty all the time. Well, I'm just not a good enough Christian, or I just can't break this sin, or I just can't stop doing this. And so I'm not moving anywhere because I'm a failure as a believer. And so we get really stuck and we say, well, at least I go to church and that's good enough. But in the deep part of our heart, there is that yearning for more, right? And we feel like, well, I wish I was a better, or I wish I could get past this, or I wish I could be different. But that doesn't lead us anywhere. When we start talking about, well, milestones, it's like, actually, I want to move forward in a process of growth, God. I want to learn something from you. I want to get to this place where you reach this thing and it says, oh yeah, you've come this distance. Instead of saying it's got to be everything or nothing, it becomes like, okay, well, God, in this process of life, let me walk by you. Teach me what that means. They're not static goals, but they're genuine steps in a living relationship. And this is the heart of it. It is a living relationship. If God is not alive, then there's no point. And you could just set up any sort of system and you could be quite happily, you know, living in a system. But if God is alive and he knows you intimately and personally, then this is something different. Now, so let me try to help explain what it means to be in this sort of divine relationship with God, because I think that's something difficult for us to grasp, partially because it's finding hard and hard to understand what it means to even have relationships. These photos, markers, memories, celebrations, triumphs, histories. When we think about these in terms of relationships with people, you realize, oh yeah, this is part of what makes this relationship deeper with each other. When you guys go out together with friends and you guys take photos and you're like, later you look back on Facebook and say, oh, so much fun. And all the other friends who weren't invited look back and are jealous because, like, oh, I didn't get invited. But it's a sense of, well, photos are amazing because they let you remember what happened. And your relationship with those people grow, right? When you get out together and you hang out and you do something fun together or you learn something from each other, you enjoy that. It's also why family is the hardest, because you've got basically your whole life's experience with them and a lot of bad things and a lot of good things and all mixed up together, but you have a lot of markers. You have a lot of memories. You have a lot of celebrations. You also have a lot of painful markers. And those are difficult, but those things emphasize that those are relationships there. What markers do you have in your relationship with God so far? What are those things in the past? What are the photos you say you might have with him? Or the memories or the celebrations? And if you think hard enough, you will think of them. The problem is we think about them in bad views sometimes. Like, oh yeah, that time I was at fat camp and, you know, I really knew God back then, but oh, things are so different now. I'm not that same person. It doesn't matter. That milestone is still true. And I love this because if you look at the Bible, you have God's people seeing God do amazing things and yet go wandering off. But God is always saying, remember that that was real, that that is a genuine milestone. Don't just throw it out because you're struggling now, but look back and know that God is faithful. We get so locked up in the present and how we're doing now and whether we're struggling that we're willing to throw out everything that God has done before and just say, well, there's no point. And God is actually saying, oh, but if you look carefully and how much I've brought you forward to this point, you would not give up hope. You would live, truly live and move forward. So let's break this down a little bit more. Spiritual development milestones are something that I think would be personal, spiritual. Discipleships are focused active, faith, and forward-looking. In other words, something that you know is a bit of a challenge. Now, this is still a challenge because when we start doing this, as soon as we label it, it'll feel like a task. And the other thing is these aren't competitions, okay? So don't say, someone say, well, I have 10 spiritual milestones that I'm working on. How about you? It's like, that's not how it works, okay? This is much more like, well, we're working together. And so I thought these phrases are the best, some of the best ways to help think of how to come up with them. Teach me about. Let me learn about. And actually what you're starting this is, God, teach me about this. God, let me learn about this. God, I'm challenged to this. And I'll give you some examples that I've thought of. One is, God, teach me how to pray for my kids. Teach me how to pray for my family. Now, if I set that for a milestone for myself, and I said, you know, actually, God, this is something I really want to learn. God, I really want you to teach me how to pray for my kids. You will immediately begin moving in that direction, right? Because it'll be like, oh, yeah, maybe just saying the same prayer that they will be financially successful in the future isn't all there is to praying for your children. Maybe there's more. But until we start thinking about these things, God, teach me about this, we don't move forward. And how great will it be like a few years later or with your kids, maybe like decades later, where God suddenly answers one of these prayers that you've been praying over, like, oh, God, you are so great because I thought my child was completely lost and yet your faithfulness endures forever. What we're looking at is saying, God, teach me in these things and I trust that when that milestone comes, it'll be fantastic because I will appreciate that. Another one that I hear a lot of people say is, oh, I just don't know the Bible well enough, and so I don't know. And they just leave it like that, like, okay, well, it's like, well, maybe you should set that as a milestone. God, teach me about your word. Okay, that's too broad, right? So be more specific. God, can you answer my questions about the Bible that I hear people asking that I don't have answers for, and they kind of make me nervous? God, answer my questions. Can you teach me about this from your word? Ask God, teach me about the historicity of the Bible and whether these things are true. And when you set that as a milestone, you begin to learn, you begin to grow, and you begin to see, wow, there is truth in this, deep truth. There is more to this. But the rejoicing comes in this situation. Someone comes to you one day and they have a problem and they don't understand this part of the Bible. And they're saying, I think this is all a lie, but you have wrestled with God there and you tell that person, oh, actually, this is it. And they go, whoa. That makes so much sense. And you're like, wow, I didn't know that this is what it feels like when I hit that milestone. You begin to realize the milestone isn't in attaining necessarily knowledge or these things, but when it comes out relationally, when you find a way that is blessed, either relationally with God or relationally with someone else. Another one is, God, teach me how to trust you with my finances. And that's a big thing, actually, to actually say, God, teach me how to trust you with my finances. Because it doesn't mean just giving everything to church. It actually means, okay, I guess you really want me to sit down and pray about these things. To pray about the money coming and to pray about the money going out. And to pray about what I spend it on. Another one is I'm challenged to go on missions. Or actually, I'm challenged to see what it's like on another part of the world. And to see how you work there. When we begin to think about these things, I really believe God will put something in your heart, actually, from the beginning. some area that you're like, actually, I know this is an area I need to work on. I need to figure out how to phrase this. But if that is what God is pressing on your heart, spend time during the worship layer to really reflect on that, to think, okay, actually, this is what I need to learn. This is where I want to grow. God, teach me this. Teach me how to love my parents. Teach me how to not be so jealous of my friends. Teach me how to have compassion for people. One of the things that we see in the Bible about this is actually the disciples. The disciples come up to Jesus, and what do they always call him? Teacher, teacher. And for us, we rarely call Jesus teacher anymore, right? We just say, Jesus, oh, friend, lover of my soul. You don't call him teacher that much. But actually, he is. He is a teacher. We are his disciples, right? So when they say teacher, they come to him and they say, teacher, teacher, teach us how to pray. Because, you know, John's disciples, they learn how the ways that John taught his disciples, teach us how to pray. And I love that because it's essentially them asking, teach us this thing. For us, it's actually saying to him, God, teach us as well. I want to learn. Now, the spiritual development milestones, I just came up with that name. I just want to find something that we can call them so that I could talk about it. Because it's something I see in the Bible, just with the memorials and the remembering. I'm like, well, how do we bring this to our own life? And I really encourage us to investigate and pray over that. But I actually want to tie these into the life groups too. It's not forced. If you don't come to a life group, it doesn't mean you can't have your own milestones. But there is great value added if you're part of a life group and you talk about these things. Number one is you have something called shared joy. You know, when you walk with someone and you've been praying for them and they're saying, you know, I've been really learning how to have more compassion. I want God to teach me about compassion. Or I've been praying that God will teach me how to share with my coworkers. And they're coming to this life group and they say, that's my milestone. Can you pray for me? Every now and then they share about how that's going and they pray for them. And then one day, they're at office and someone is going through a really hard time and they have a chance to pray for them and they pray for them. They come back and they share that in the life group. Life group gets collaborative joy, in other words. Everyone shares in that joy together and everyone says, yes, that's so awesome because I've been praying for you. I'm so happy. And that's something really precious that if you're just fighting this by yourself or one person, you will get. But when you share that joy amongst other people, it gets magnified. The other thing that you get in doing this in life group is you get accountability, shared support. And you also get shared ideas. They say, oh, maybe we should try this. And you realize, actually, this is a great place for me to open up about these things. The other thing about this is it opens up your mind spiritually, reminding that actually that we are not just alive and physically, but God has given us a spiritual nature, soul that is alive and being nurtured. Within the life group, sharing these personal spiritual development milestones, you get shared memories, shared joy, shared struggles, and collaborative prayer, where you come together and you do these things. You guys know that I've been talking a lot about these life groups, and next week we'll have one more message about it. But to give you a recap, is I really felt like one of the areas our church needs to grow in is actually discipleship, or how to become disciples. And one of the things about that is we need to have smaller groups, groups of 5 to 7 people, where you can actually share about your life and remember that there are spiritual things going on. The thing about these is they only work if you're committed. Now everyone's like, I don't know, my timetable is really complicated. I'm a doctor, I'm on call sometimes, or like I have evening and parent meetings. I don't know if I can even commit to the time. Actually, what you're committed to is two things. One is to growing with God. If you're not committed to growing with God, then you come to these groups and you feel like it's a waste of time. But the second thing is being committed to people. Saying, actually, I want to invest in the people's lives in this group. Even if we don't always get along, I want to invest in their lives. After that, a group of 5 to 7 people, arranging schedules is actually not impossible. It's actually a lot easier. And even if you say, well, I can only be there 2 out of 4 weeks, that's fine, especially if you're still committed to growing, right? And you're still committed to people's lives, it's still okay. But if you don't have that commitment to people's lives and you don't have that openness to be part of that, then you know what it's like. You come to this group and no one wants to be there, so there's no point. That kind of commitment is what we're saying, because that kind of commitment is the kind that gives you growth in your relationship with God. I've been trying to train up some of the leaders, and we'll be looking to start these in November. And if you're interested, we're trying to set them up so you don't have to travel too far. Obviously, one of the biggest deterrents, it sounds lame, is transport. But it's true. If it's farther away, you will be less inclined to go, especially if you're working. If you're a university student, I don't really know what your excuse is, but normally it's,
the bus fare is so expensive,
which is possibly true too. But and we're also doing this on the university level, but just for the university groups. So we'll be setting up one closer to town and one closer to the campus to BU. If you are interested in this, what I'm going to ask ANSI to do now is to hand out life group sort of, they're not application forms as much as they're, well, they're not application forms because if you apply, you'll get in. So it's not really like that. It's more like, let me know where you live. You might have filled this out already. If you've done it already, you don't have to fill out again. If you filled out last time and you said no and now you've changed your mind, just grab one and say, actually, I want to be part of this now. And if you don't want to, I've made it sound so I don't go home crying. I says, oh, sounds interesting, but not thank you, not at this time. So you can just check that out. If you don't put your name because you're afraid I'm going to use it or something, then don't have to. It's okay. I won't know. So ANSI's going to hand those out. Let me get Alex to help hand them out. And during the worship, you guys can reflect on it and fill it in. And I'll collect these at the end of the service as well. So go ahead. Can you hand them out? Yeah. So just go ahead and hand them out. The final question to just kind of leave you is, what spiritual development milestones is God challenging you with? What are the things that you say? He's saying, you know, God, teach me about this. God, I want to learn about this. God, I'm challenged for this. As you guys begin to reflect on that, if you can also, you know, text yourself is what I do so that I'll have on my phone, because I'll actually look at my phone, but I won't look at any other notes I take anywhere else on any sort of paper. But you can do that. If you guys don't have a pen but just want to fill it out later, you can also, we'll have a box in the back, you can just drop it off in. So at this point, I'll just invite the worship team to come back up, and let me pray, and then we'll come back to a time of worship. Let's pray. God, I thank you so much for your enduring faithfulness. You know, it's something that we really take for granted, that indeed your love endures forever. God, you know my heart's desire is that we, as a community, really desire to walk with you, to grow with you. You know, that there is a different way to live this life. There is a different way of living, Lord, and that's what we want. To be alive with you and to live with you and not just be like everyone else, lost or frustrated, but knowing that there is a hope, that there is a truth, that you give us something else. God, you are a living God. And we look to you, living God, speak to us now. We praise you. In your name we pray. Amen. As the worship team leads us into